session number 4298, reel 5. Dr. Frankenschwerf, reel 5.
Let me repeat this. There's a big difference between prison and internment camp. Internment camp is protection for this country, and prison is punishment, more or less. I mean, they say it isn't. It is re-education, but unfortunately, this is hardly ever true. So the parallel just doesn't work.
You mentioned just a few minutes ago the guard who pointed out the coal to you, and you previously mentioned another one who got apples for a group of you.
Yeah.
They seem to have treated you in a very friendly way. I would have expected that they might see themselves as prison guards towards you, almost.
Yes, in the beginning, I remember when we went from the station in Heighton to the internment camp, one really had the feeling the guards were hostile. They were bringing home prisoners, in a way. But this changed very, very quickly. I don't know what happened to them or how they realized that these were generally peaceful, harmless bourgeois citizens in the main, and why should he be short of apples if there are apples, or why should he feel cold?
How much did you actually talk to them?
Very little. Very little. In fact, they were hardly visible in the end. The camp was run more or less by itself. In the beginning, unfortunately, because of the amateur cooking, but then the army camp supplied the food, and this was better. It is amazing how an amorphous mass like these people, in a way, get some sort of organization and form groups to a degree. Not very visible, but still, there were people who were mainly talking. There were people who were mainly idling their time away by playing cards, and other people who went to the, you might almost call it the camp university, to better themselves, to find out about things they had never a chance to learn about. Yes, some sort of organized life, loosely, very loosely organized life, forms itself in a situation like this. There was no pressure from the outside. There was no direction, no regimentation. You have to do this, you must do that, and so on. It was this was very, very English indeed.
To what extent did the camp form itself a sort of social hierarchy, with certain people becoming leaders?
Well, again, 9 weeks didn't give me much chance to see this, but I'm quite sure something like this would come about. The people who did the lecture obviously were regarded as something superior in a way, and one would listen to them. But there was no chance yet to form groups in order to influence the word harm. But there is something which I have forgotten. The visit of... Now, I'd switch off for a moment, because a lady came to the camp to find out about the situation.
Was it Eleanor Rathbone?
That's right, Eleanor Rathbone. Yeah, that is quite a pleasant story. Now you can switch on.
Yes.
Elena Rathbone came to the camp, and some people had prepared a sort of dossier with their complaints or what. I never saw it. But I know when she came to the hut where we assembled to see her, she talked about the injustice that we should be here and something should be done, and she would raise it in the House of Commons. And somebody wanted to give her this document, and an officer tried to intervene. But he failed. Lady Rathbone quickly grabbed it, and I think she pushed it into her blouse, and that was that. Which again was a very pleasant undertaking, that somebody from the outside should come in and say, well, we are not satisfied, things must get better, and the whole principle possibly isn't right. So again, this gave a little bit of hope to the camp.
What can you remember about her?
Very little, except a very resolute lady who didn't miss a chance to show her energy. Yes, let me have it. That was very pleasant indeed.
Were people who were interned interested in escaping?
I doubt it very much. I had made up my mind I would try to escape, and I don't think it would have been very difficult if the Germans landed. And also, I didn't want to be sent to Canada, and I decided if I am on this list, I disappear somehow, possibly not outside the camp, but inside the camp, which shouldn't have been too difficult. There were lofts and many, many houses. So at the moment when they collected the people who were on the list, I wouldn't be there. In fact, I told the officer I did not want to be sent to Canada under any circumstances. Whether this helped not to be put on the list or not, I don't know. But I discussed this with this old friend of mine and said, look, this is out. I'm not going.
Why didn't you want to go?
Well, first of all, because of my wife, and I felt I will not stay in this camp forever. I felt absolutely certain that eventually they would sort out the black sheep from the whites, and I knew my firm was trying to get me out. I didn't realize it would be so quickly, but I knew it, or not I knew it's too much, but I felt pretty sure I wouldn't stay there forever.
No, you're right. If you'd gone to Canada, you would have been there for months.
Yeah, that was...
Maybe years.
Yeah. There was another chance to get out if you joined the pioneers.
Yes.
I did consider to do some war service, but not as a pioneer, because that is not the right job for me. Possibly to work on the radio or some sort of political work, propaganda in Germany, things like this, I certainly would have liked to do, but pioneer, no. But I felt pretty sure I wouldn't stay for the duration. And in any case, at this time, the war should have been over by Christmas, as you possibly know. Well, I never believed that.
How much pressure was put on people to join the Pioneer Corps?
No pressure at all, I would assume. I think you had to apply for it, and they would then sort of look at you and say yes or no. I know a few people went.
You mentioned your plan to disappear. Did anyone try to escape?
Not that I know of. Well, again, in the long run, possibly somebody would try, I would assume. But during the first few months, one wanted to see what's going to happen. No, the only reason for me to consider it was if the Germans came, I wouldn't be there as a sitting target.
No, of course. Was this something you discussed amongst yourselves?
I discussed it with my friend, this old gentleman mentioned several times. But no, not generally. It was too... The whole situation wasn't as clear as one would expect. First of all, there was the shock of an entirely different situation. Then the rather difficult assessment of the news, what was really happening, and so on. I knew before this happened that Germany had invaded France and went through Belgium and was victorious on all fronts. So one couldn't really guess what was going to happen. America hadn't joined the war yet. So it was a huge cloud, but one couldn't see exactly details or even guess of the future. But strangely enough, and this I can repeat all the time, to my amazement, I never contemplated that Germany would conquer the world, to put it very simply.
No, I've heard that from other people as well. It strikes me, in retrospect, as rather amazing.
It is. I told you, if I think back, why did I feel this way? Absolutely. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind, but there should have been, really. Possibly it is the belief in good conquers evil somehow. A very naive but very deep-rooted feeling, which, with all this cynicism which one has acquired during life, one still retains, basically. How right, how wrong, I'm not sure. In fact, in the book which will appear, I hope, this year, there is a lot about this difficulty about deciding good and evil. What is good? And how much evil side effects does it usually carry with it, and the other way around. Even evil very often contains an element of good. And it's so terribly difficult to decide which is which. More difficult these days than it ever has been. I mean, there was the simple faith religion which knew all the answers. Well, that's gone. And now we don't know the answers. And the religious answers were not right either. Otherwise, we wouldn't have dropped them. So, the huge question mark, in fact, that is the question mark of today, to decide what is good and what is evil, and we don't know.
Speaking of this dichotomy of good and evil in one thing, how did it feel to you, being a German, to be an English enemy alien at war with your own country?
Well, I was in a way pleased that there would be a war and that this evil would be eradicated. So I had no patriotic feeling for Germany at all. I still loved and still love German culture, German literature, poetry, painting. German culture is still part of me, and I never had a wish to shed this. But as long as I can remember, I always doubted German civilization. And I think I said this at the beginning. And it is for the sake of civilization that I decided I would come to England, which even now, to me, oh dear, perhaps we are on the borderline of losing it. For me, this is still the most civilized country. Still is, though the edges are getting slightly worn. Basically, I feel this is deeply ingrained in the English character. I hope I'm right. I don't know whether I said this, but it's perfectly true. In many respects, I am a German, and no doubt about it. My cultural background is German. But what I learned from this country, or why I came to this country, possibly in order to learn it, is a slightly different attitude towards my unknown neighbor. And that is civilization. In case of doubt, everything is all right. you needn't prove it. This is more or less the general attitude here. In Germany, everything must be proved. And they only know black and white. Things are good or things are bad, and that is that, and if you have any doubt about it, I knock you over the head. And here, compromise is such a sensible thing. In German, there is a phrase, fauler Kompromiss, rotten compromise. And this always stuck in my mind as very, very typical. Compromise is the basis of a civilized life. And Germans feel that compromise is weakness. And this is the deep difference between the two nations. Again, here you have the reason why I came to England.
How then did the fact that you were interned affect your view of British fairness and reasonableness?
No, I told you from the beginning. I understood it. I expected it. I felt under the situation at this moment. They couldn't do anything else. They couldn't risk a lot of spies in the country. Undoubtedly, there must have been. So, intern the lot was a sensible thing to do, and sort out later, which they did. No, I didn't feel wronged or less confident about the values of this country, not a bit. There I possibly differed from a number of people, undoubtedly. No, it didn't hurt me. I protested by not shaving, wearing the beard, telling the officers, well, I want to get out, but it wasn't in the sense I have been wronged.
How much notice did you have that you were going to be released?
I believe 24 hours notice.
And was your wife notified as well?
I don't know. I could ask her.
Well, did she expect you when you came back?
Yes, I think she did. Oh, yes, of course, she must have done. I don't know whether this is part of what you want to know. By coming out, first of all, I told you the commandant was at the gate and we did shake hands. Then I went on the train and really had a feeling of being free, amazingly so. Even 9 weeks behind barbed wire are oppressive in a way. And I only realized when I was traveling through the lovely countryside, a free man, it was a wonderful feeling. Then the son of my boss collected me from the station and was very amused about my beard, and he drove me, what I expected, home. I said, which way are you going? Oh, you are not at your old address anymore, because that was too risky. Your wife is now in a block of flats in Finchley. And my first idea was, when I come home, I have a bath and I sleep in a real bed and it would be wonderful. Instead of which, I came to this house, and my wife was there, and we embraced, and then she showed me my place in the aerated shelter. She was on a little wooden bench about a foot wide, and I was beside her bench on the concrete floor. It was a very thin mattress which somebody had sent me to the Heiden camp as a gift, so one could get gift parcels. So I had this little thin mattress, which I still got, and I was lying on the concrete floor. And I can tell you, I was so amused about this contrast of my expectations and the reality. It really was great fun. We stayed there for quite a while. I think friends of ours had a flat there, and they went to Scotland or something, and they said, you can have, or my wife can have, her or their position in the cellar, in the air raid shelter. so that was the homecoming, which in a way let me down quite a bit.
Did you find that the fact that you had been interned made any difference in having jobs or job contacts or
finding housing? No, I went back to my job. There was no problem whatsoever. And let me think, what happened? When did we... Did we go back to... I have forgotten whether we went back to our old flat or whether we found something else. Yes, we found a flat in Pullman Court in Streatham, which was nearer my job. A very nice flat in a very modern court. Incidentally, when we first came to this country, friends of ours took us by car around London, and we passed this very modern house. And we liked it very much, with roof gardens and swimming pool and all this. So when we passed it, my wife said, look, we shall never have a thing like this anymore. And we did. We stayed there for 3 or 4 years in this very modern flat with a swimming pool, roof garden. And during the Blitz, we had a lovely time. There was a sort of cafe where one collected in the evening, and we had coffee and played games. And then when the sirens went, we went into the ground floor, which was sandbagged, mainly young people. It was a very, very lovely atmosphere. We still have friends from this period.
Were these English friends, or was this a group of refugees?
No, no, English. Possibly we were the only... No, there was another couple of German origin, but mainly English, all English. And then, I believe he went to Harrow, to Lightwater first, where I again did some war work on glass blowing machinery and so on. And then life went on, and not too badly after all. Things. One was the funny thing that... are you still on?
Yes.
Switch it off for a moment. After a year or so, we went to this other place in Harrow, and when I went to the police to tell them of the change of address, they told me, I hope you did enjoy it. After all, you had a bicycle, you saw a lot of the countryside. You know, of course, why this is a restricted area. I said, no, I've not the faintest idea. My goodness, you must have passed all these stacks of wood in the surrounding countryside, particularly in the woods on the so-and-so road. I said, yes, I saw them. These are ammunition dumps, my dear chap.
The police told you that?
Yeah, the police told me that. No, the other thing which I found very, very wonderful, really, we had a small place in Harrow, an empty house, lightly built. And there we had lots of glass tubes and Bunsen burners about, and the girls were sitting and making embryos and cacca tubes and God knows what. And when a warning came and planes were overhead, I looked around and said, well, what's going to happen to these girls? How will they react? After all, if anything in the neighborhood comes down, we shall be cut to smithereens, plus the gas burners blowing the whole place up. No reaction whatsoever. The conversation went on as if nothing had happened. And only when the all clear went, you had a slight feeling that there must have been perhaps a little bit of tension. Nothing. You couldn't see it. You couldn't hear it. It simply ignored. Quite wonderful. No, during the war, this country, in a crazy way, was a paradise. People were good, helpful, very, very brave, put up with a lot of things. You didn't hear much grumbling, if any. And look at us now.
Presumably, it must have been the same in Germany. for people who weren't affected by Hitler's anti-Semitism. They would have been pulling together for the common good.
Yes, but in an entirely different style. Patriotism writ large, flag waving, like England most likely during the First World War, where there was a lot of jingoism. It must have been. This suits the German character very well, you know. To show patriotism, to put out the flags, to march and demonstrate, but also buy in the black market as much as you can.
What do you remember of the First World War when you were just a little boy?
Oh, I do remember one thing, that in August, I believe the war started in August, I suddenly got terrible pain, and it was the appendix which had to be taken out. So I went to the hospital, and after the second day, I had visit of soldiers, and I felt so wonderful, you know, to be amongst our brave defenders of Germany. A wonderful feeling, like a boy who has been nurtured on this sort of patriotism. So obviously we were victorious until we were not. Oh, I remember this very well. Also the shortage of food in the end, the substitute butter, the substitute honey, the substitute, everything was done of from a certain type of root vegetable, as jam, as meat, as vegetable. That was pretty tough. And I also remember the first, when the war was over, suddenly cigarettes, English cigarettes came. And I remember the first English cigarette, which made me dizzy, the strange tobacco.
Because it was real tobacco.
I just remember at this time in the press, they talked about Haydn as the hell of Haydn, which was a wonderful reporter's headline, but nowhere near the truth. It was disorganized, it was bad in the beginning. As I told you before, it soon was better organized, and nowhere near, could one say, a hell. To be separated from one's family, to be torn out of one's life, is, of course, well, not a hellish experience, but a hurtful experience, and for some people more hurtful than for others. But the hell of Haydn, well, this is journalese at its worst.